Good afternoon. It's Friday, the 3rd of February 2017, just after 1 o'clock. Welcome to UK Column News. I'm your host, Brian Gerrish. With me, of course, in the studio, Mike Robinson. And we will be joined by David Scott from north of the border with Northern Exposure. Very timely, as lots happening, particularly on the defence front. But there's been a divorce, I believe, you're going to introduce.
Well, first of all, we're talking about the white paper that was released yesterday. David Davis gave his opening remarks when he was launching this yesterday afternoon. He said that the government is setting out in the white paper 11 negotiating objectives to build a global Britain with a strong partnership with the EU after our exit. And the 12 negotiating objectives include providing certainty and clarity as we approach negotiations, taking control of our own laws and statute book, strengthening the union by breaking it up, maintaining the common travel area, and therefore stopping immigration. Well, this is regards to Ireland, but you take the point. Securing our rights, the rights of European citizens already living in the UK and the rights of UK nationals living in the European Union, and so on. So it goes on. So here is the document. With regard to providing legal certainty, of course, we mentioned this several times before. What they're talking about is the Great Repeal Bill, which removes the European Communities Act 1972 from the statute book and converts what they call the AQUIS, the body of existing EU law, into domestic law. So let's just remind everybody what the AQUIS is. This, of course, is the rule from the EU that says once you have devolved or given away sovereignty in certain areas to the EU, you can never get them back. And that's why EU law is being migrated into so-called domestic law. And of course, following on from that, they claim that we'll be able to decide what goes on the statute books for ourselves afterwards. I maintain that what that means is that we will stay in sync with European Union law from here on. They go on to say in the white paper, ending the jurisdiction of the European Court of Justice. But we will, of course, continue to honour our international commitments and follow international law. So, you know, you can read into that as you wish.
Yeah, my early point there was that this is UK divorcing the European Union, but we're going to remain lovers.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. What was next? Strengthening trade in the world, because we must strengthen trade. Before we get on to that, we should mention the dispute resolution mechanisms, because of course, dispute resolution mechanisms were the main bone of contention, the main area of concern for people that were fighting TTIP and TPP. But the government recognises that ensuring a fair and equitable implementation of our future relationship with the EU requires provision for dispute resolution. So there you go. They cite CETA and the other trade deals, just so that we know that that's exactly what they're talking about. They go on to mention strengthening trade with the world. Cooperation in fighting crime and terrorism. Well, we're one of the participants, one of the 13 participants in Europol. That's got to continue. Very little said about defence policy, other than to say that we participate in the common security and defence policy missions and operations around the globe. Our objective is to ensure that the EU's role in defence and security is complementary to and respects the central role of NATO. After we leave the EU, we will remain committed to European security and add value to EU foreign and security policy. Well, we're certainly going to add value to EU security policy by giving our nuclear weapons to them.
There's no doubt this is happening. It's not going to happen. It's happening. The transfer of UK's nuclear deterrent is going to go via France under EU control. And this is just utter deceit by the government. There is no breakaway from Europe because our armed forces are being fully integrated into the EU. And we're going to have a little look at how that's going to be done in a moment.
So
where do we go from that?
Yeah.
David, do you just want to respond to that? Obviously, north of the border, different views. We're going to link in some of the defence moves with Scotland a little bit later in the news. But what's your thought on the white paper?
In north of the border, different views. We had a member of the Scottish so-called National Party stand up in the House of Commons and talk glowingly about Europe and how he wished to share sovereignty with Europe. So that's the view from the ruling party here. What you describe sounds surprisingly like a bit of backdoor sovereignty sharing. International law is an interesting one. I think a lot of people don't really understand what that means, because it rather suggests that there's some worldwide view as to what lawful conduct is. This in a world where one country sits and decides who's going to die in drone strikes seems a strange position. And the law in general, remember, the law has been heavily modified. As Bastiat showed, it's been transferred from a protection against plunder, a protection of the weak, into an instrument of plunder. So, yes, we're going to have lawmaking powers return to some extent, but unless the people making those laws actually understand what the law is, and unless the people of this country can insist on lawful conduct and lawful laws and reject the ones that are not lawful, then it's only window dressing.
Only window dressing, absolutely. Well, let's follow through and see how the Tory MPs deal with things. And what better place to go than our very own local Tory Gary Streeter, because he was speaking out yesterday or the day before in the local Plymouth Herald. He said the time has come to be brutally honest with the public to predict to. And he's effectively saying, I predict, it's I here. So he goes on, I predict the process of leaving Europe could take up to 10 years. So this is so difficult, so convoluted, so confusing, it could take up to 10 years. So the start of the message is that the Conservative government has not been honest over Brexit. He says now's the time to be honest when we actually can see the white of their eyes. Let's follow this through. He warned of short-term pain as a result of Brexit, predicting there'll be less money available to spend on the NHS, social care and schools. Nice emotive subject there, Mike. This is a little bit of applied psychology. You vote for Brexit, we're not going to be able to fund the NHS. So this is spin, less NHS money. And of course, the money's created from nothing, but Mr. Streeter doesn't want to talk about this. So he's putting this big smokescreen over the whole thing. Why is he doing this? Well, what the Conservatives have just said they are going to do is move jobs from England, but specifically the Plymouth area, to Scotland. And that is another step on the road to the closure of Devonport Naval Base. Now, Devonport Naval Base, huge base, 365 hectares, largest naval base in Europe, sitting there redundant. And what is it going to be turned into, do you think, Mike? A play park or housing? Well, follow through with our old friend Ian Duncan Smith. A couple of days ago, he let slip on Channel 4 that Britain will be remaining in the EU defence plan. So here we get it rubber stamped again. The real game is that while they talk Brexit, Britain's military is being locked in. There's no question that he knows what's going on. And this is further deceit. So if we follow it through, here's the announcement from the government. They're saying that basically all Royal Navy nuclear submarines, including obviously the nuclear deterrent, but the manpower, the training, the whole lot is going to move to Scotland. I've added making one simple target for a hostile nation, because the thing you should never do is put all your eggs in one basket because somebody takes them out with one preemptive strike. That's not a problem. And on goes Fallon. He says we're making a long-term investment, hundreds of millions of pounds, to upgrade the Clyde. It's going to be good for Scotland, but it's going to keep Britain safe and secure. And sorry, I'll just make that a little bit clearer. He's also saying that the Royal Marines' future is going to be secure, not in England, but in Scotland. We know the facilities are being closed south of the border. Our Royal Marines are at the heart of Britain's global role as we do more to support our NATO allies. Their future in Scotland is secure. So this is all pretty obvious. And I'll just add this one, and I'll give you the opportunity to come in here, David. But we have had a very good tip off that the decision to effectively close down Devonport Naval Base, move all those submarines north of the border, was taken by this man, George Robertson. We're going back to his period as Defence Secretary, 1997-1999. We've got it on good authority that this is when the decision was made that the nuclear weapons, the submarines, lock, stock and barrel was going to be moved north of the border. So a pro-European Scotsman simply saying all those years ago, we're going to move this out of UK. There's something very dirty going on here, David, and it's phenomenal that as Brexit unfolds, Fallon is really saying we're going to increase military capability in Scotland.
It is. It doesn't seem to tie in with any, say, military assessment. In fact, I'm not clear as to what the military assessment is, what we're actually planning to use our defence forces, our Army, Navy and Air Force for. There's no discussion about this. There's no debate other than in the context of altogether with Europe and some vague sabre rattling against Russia. None of it seems very rational.
Right, I'm glad you said that. Sorry to interject there, but let's add this next bit. Of course, we had a look at the SNP's website this morning, and of course, what's SNP saying? We don't want Trident. I even spoke to their press team and said, what's the SNP's position on nuclear weapons? He said, we don't want them. Go and have a look at the manifesto, which we did. And of course, what's in there is scrapping Trident. So we've got Nicola Sturgeon is breaking her non-nuclear pledge, and she's going to take all of the Royal Navy's nuclear submarines and nuclear weapons. So if we look at that as one statement, we've got the situation where all of our nuclear weapons are going to be passed to a pro-EU anti-nuclear SNP en route to the French taking over control, followed by the EU. And I'm just going to bring in here, you almost said it then, if this looks like a madhouse that nobody knows what's going on, what's really going on is treason.
The inconsistencies in the SNP policy are quite severe. Many years ago, when the SNP was a different party, incidentally, when they were calling George Robertson Chicken George, that was their nickname for him back in the day, the policy was to leave NATO because it's a nuclear alliance and they didn't want any part of it, to have an entirely independent defence force, looking only at local defence of the shoreline and the nation, not sure against who, but there we go, and to not be in the EU either. Whatever you would say about it, it was certainly consistent. It was a policy for national independence. Now, they seem to have, well, they certainly have moved away from that now. We're into sharing sovereignty. We're into remaining as part of NATO. So the whole defence of Scotland is, as the SNP define it, is based on a nuclear umbrella and a nuclear armed alliance, but we are going to be non-nuclear. And when asked why, the explanation was, well, we'll set an example and other nations will follow. And when asked which other nations would see Scotland or Britain get rid of their nuclear deterrent and then follow suit, no answer was forthcoming. In a long and embarrassing interview where the question was asked and asked and asked, they couldn't cite one nation, because of course there would be none. It's a dangerous world and people who are armed with these horrendous weapons tend to be left alone.
David, thank you very much for that. And I'll just end by saying, of course, David Ellis's recent paper about how the French were to take over Britain's nuclear deterrent is still very much circulating, a lot of interest, but of course not one single response from the mainstream media or even Plymouth's local paper, the Plymouth Herald. They've been given the information, no comment. Nobody must talk about defence, as your first slide said, Mike.
No. OK, well, Theresa May has headed over to Malta today for the EU-Malta summit. This is mainly talking about migration, but actually Theresa herself is over there to discuss defence. Let's see what they're doing. Well, they have a first working session, or they had at 10 o'clock this morning, a first working session on migration. Then they're having an informal working lunch, which you do.
I think we've heard this before with the EU summit meetings, Mike.
Yes. And then later on, they're having a second working session on the preparations for the 60th anniversary of the Rome Treaties. Now, before we start talking about the migration aspect of this, I just wanted to highlight this preparations for the 60th anniversary of the Rome Treaties. because what they're talking about is that this will be an occasion for the 27 leaders to prepare for the upcoming anniversary of the Rome Treaties on the 25th of March. The discussions will build upon the political reflection on the future of the EU, with 27 member states launched immediately after the UK voted to leave the European Union. This is really what grabbed my attention, because one of the subjects that they're going to be discussing, and David, I'm interested in a comment on this, is the state of the mind of pro-European elites. I'll say that again. They will be discussing the state of mind of the pro-European elites, and particularly the decline of the faith in political integration, submission to populist arguments, and doubt in the fundamental values of liberal democracy. David, they're panicking.
Indeed, this is an admission of losing the argument, so fundamentally and so quickly that there is no response. There is simply headless chickens running around. We see it in America. We see it all across Europe. They realize that after, 70 years of being unchallenged in the political ascendancy, they got very, very sloppy and very arrogant. And eventually there's a backlash, and they just don't know what to do with this.
No.
Right. Just add a point, Mike. Of course, yesterday we were able to inform people that I think Theresa May has said that one in four people mentally ill.
Yes.
So if they're worried about the mental state of the elites, probably one in four of those elites are mentally ill.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
It's not looking good.
No. Well, let me just bring this back on screen again, because I just wanted to mention this sculpture. There's unfortunately no way of sort of getting an idea of scale here, but this sculpture is sitting between the podium and I guess the press mainly, or certainly people listening to them giving press statements and so on. Answers on a postcard for what the heck this is.
Well, they've been doing common purpose games, the sort we've seen the NHS people doing. This is a leadership training. You're given a big pile of cubes, and then as a European Union leader, you have to put the pieces together. Probably a four-year-old could do it quite quickly. It's going to take the European Union elites at least 4 days, I think.
Well, there you go.
It's a game.
Yes. Okay. So the other subject that they're talking about, aside from defence, is migration. Sorry. And here's Donald Tusk talking about that this morning. He said our main goal for the Malta summit is to stem the flow of irregular migration from Libya to Europe. This is the only way to stop people dying in the deserts and at sea. This is the only way to gain control over migration in Europe. So it's pretty profound stuff from him. Well, here they all are gathered because they issued a summit statement on migration. They said, we welcome and support the Maltese presidency's efforts to take forward all elements of the EU's comprehensive migration policy. We reaffirm our determination to act in full respect of human rights, international law and European values, and in conjunction with UNHCR and IOM. They said that what they were going to do was to stabilise Libya, they're going to do their utmost to contribute to that objective. They said that these objectives can be underpinned by the necessary resources. In line with the Valletta Action Plan, the European Union is strengthening the mainstreaming of migration within its official development assistance for Africa, which amounts to 31 billion euros during the financial period. Some of the actions referred to above can be funded within projects already underway, notably projects funded by the EU Trust Fund for Africa as appropriate, which mobilises 1.8 billion. So lots of money being spent. They said that they were going to deal with the underlying causes of the trouble in Libya. Perhaps they should have thought about that before they actually started bombing the place.
Well, let's not forget, though, Mike, the European Union has been paying the political charity Common Purpose to help train the new leaders in Libya. So I think they got it under control.
OK, well, let's have a look at international cooperation and development. This is, of course, the official development assistance for Africa. Now, the UK's definition of official development assistance, they say that the UK's official development assistance aims to create a safer and more prosperous world. Together with the government's 2% defence commitment, the aid budget helps extend the UK's influence in the world. So this doesn't look to me too much like humanitarianism or human rights or anything like that. This is about extending influence.
Soft power.
Power, 31 billion euros going into extending influence. So that's what that's about. And that's what the summit's about. So there you go.
Well, I'm not surprised. Many years ago, probably 10, 12 years ago, there were UKIP members who had been in the EU headquarters in Brussels. They reported going into a room of display boards, and on it were maps of Africa showing the areas that the EU was going to absorb into the European Union. And a lot of them were quite spooked by that at the time. So I think these are very long established plans that the European Empire is supposed to include at least North Africa.
Yeah. So what's next?
We have this one here. We're going on to political violence. I think this comes to you, David.
Oh, it does. Go ahead.
Yeah, just before we go on to that, the North Africa is all looking a bit like the Roman Empire. That's quite spooky. And the other thing is this idea that we're going to stabilise things. The way these countries have been destabilised, you fund and arm some rebel groups, you stir up local hatreds, and you make sure some people die in the streets. And then when the official government reacts in the only way official governments can, with greater violence, then you bomb them from the air and you take the country apart. And you put nothing in place, so what you get is warlordism, violence, and a great deal of human misery. So that seems to be the policy. So yes, how to improve things in Africa? Stop helping would be a good starting place.
Yes. So is this the policy agenda for the West now as well, then?
Well, yes. Here we go. So this is. Been playing on New York Times. It's been in the National and the Scottish newspaper in that supports independence. All about is it right to punch fascists? Now the actual incident was this gentleman here who is he's alt right and he's part of the alt right, which is quite the extreme end. He calls himself an identitarian. He says he's not a Nazi, but isn't averse to giving. Nazi-style salutes and using language which is openly anti-Jewish and based on a politics of primarily on skin colour and European identity. So there's a lot to argue with in what he believes, but we're not arguing with him apparently. No. What we're going to do is we're going to wait until he's been interviewed in the street, and talking about a cartoon frog and looking at the camera, and we're going to run in, or someone run in with their face covered, dressed all in black, and sucker punched him. And you have to look at this scene and you ask, who's the fascist? And as people have pointed out, that it's been long ago predicted that if fascism came to America, it would be called anti-fascism when it was, and that's exactly what's happening. So rather than defeating the arguments, rather than even trying to address the arguments, because, of course, in all of this, there will be real issues and real issues that some political wings of American society don't want to talk about. Well, we'll punch him in the face and that'll make things better. Then double down so there was more violence. This next one here, there's an English commentator who is openly and in fact outrageously homosexual. One, he makes no bones about this. He calls his tour of American universities, speaking tour of American universities, the dangerous faggot tour. So he's quite open about his lifestyle. He is a conservative thinker and speaker. He's actually very intelligent and at times extremely heartfelt speaker and well worth a listen to. And he's called Milo Yiannopoulos. He's also half Jewish. So these black-clad, face-covered anarchists flying the anarchist red and black flag, which has been responsible for a lot of death all over the world, decided that freedom of speech was going to be rescinded at the University College Berkeley, where the freedom of speech movement in America got going in the 60s. And they smashed some windows and they set light to a generator and stopped the event taking place. So Berkeley, UC College Berkeley, no freedom of speech because of political violence.
Savages are overplaying their hand.
Well, yes, this is a newsletter from historian, economist and conservative thinker Thomas E. Woods. And he points out that what's the reaction been to the violence? Now, the violence has been supported by much of the mainstream left, by the usual actor-lovey Hollywood set have supported the demonstrations. And as a result, most of America sat down and Googled Milo and views of his lectures and discussions have gone up enormously. So the violence is not working in suppressing the ideas. The ideas are winning. And we should be conducting this debate in the realm of ideas, not in the realm of smashing property, burning things and assaulting perfectly law-abiding people. There's people there who were queuing up to get in to see a lecture talking about conservative ideas, and they were assaulted, spat on, maced, because they were wearing the wrong sort of hat.
Okay. And what's going on in Romania then?
Well, reasons to be cheerful. Frankly, Mike, I would have to say I'm a little bit jealous of people who are Romanian today, because here we have 180,000 people marching in Romania for the rule of law. Right? Now, bearing in mind what our parliament has done in abusing and assaulting children and covering it up and making sure the perpetrators get off scot-free. And there hasn't been 180,000 British people marching for the rule of law, sadly. But the Romanians are more awake, it would seem. Now, what happened here is there was a huge scandal of political corruption, and a lot of people got convicted, and a lot of people got jailed. And then the government, whose side was responsible for the corruption, they were still in power. So they decided that there was a prison overcrowding problem and they were going to change the rules on who has to stay in jail. And you know, remarkably, Mike, all of their political associates were going to be released. Purely coincidentally, of course. You know, that you understand that it's just, you know, we have to do something about the prison overcrowding problem. So all of the people who were responsible for the corruption were going to walk. And the people took to the streets, 180,000 marching for the rule of law. So there is hope.
Okay, well, let's get straight on to the fake news spot then. And I wanted to remind everybody about this documentary produced by Panorama and its associated shortened versions for the BBC News. This is probably one of the most serious examples of fake news ever produced. Because, of course, this was a direct attempt to influence a parliamentary vote on whether we bomb a sovereign nation or not, Syria. Why are we mentioning this now? Because Craig Murray, former British ambassador, was speaking on January the 27th to the Edinburgh SNP Club. And he, here's what he had to say. I think there's been an awful lot on the BBC that's simply been deliberate propaganda. And when they had the debate on bombing Syria, the idea that bombing Syria would help stop people dying, in the run-up to that debate, you remember we were having almost every BBC news bulletin full of stories of Syrian government forces killing civilians, whereas our bombs never do. And he went on to say, now I have friends in the BBC and in Panorama itself, in fact, and what I'm told happened, which I think I believe is the truth. I mean, there's some people who believe that the whole thing was a setup and that that the whole bombings and things never happened at all. And the whole thing was just a setup with actors. I don't think that's true. I think what happened is that they were filming when something had happened. They rather exaggerated how bad the incident was, and bits of it they filmed again because they didn't get it clearly, or it wasn't exactly as they wanted it. And it seems to me that there's a line here that's been crossed, because if you're doing something that's supposed to be news, and you've got someone bringing in someone on a stretcher, you can't say, right, sorry, can we have another take, and get them to bring him in the stretcher again. And that's what was happening. So no matter how real the incident on which the thing was based and what we were seeing was a fictionalized account posing as real life, and that To me, the BBC has been crossing a line and been crossing that kind of line quite regularly in its coverage of Syria. So he had mentioned this before. In fact, in March last year, he had said on his own blog, let me pin my colours to the mast and say that I'm absolutely convinced that the BBC did a deliberately and knowingly fake evidence of chemical attacks. If you look for that blog post on Craig Murray's website, it says it's titled Moderate Rebels Use Yellow Phosphorus on Kurds in Aleppo. And he embeds a video of a presentation by Robert Stewart. Robert Stewart has been running this website, Fabrication and BBC Panorama, Saving Syria's Children, for quite some time. He is one of the unsung heroes of the independent media because he's really trying to, he's focusing on one issue of fake news with the BBC. He's done some fantastic work. Do get onto Craig Murray's website and watch the video of his presentation at the From Stop War event. And also look at Robert Stewart's website on this, because this is one of the most heinous examples of fake news that we have going, Brian.
Can I just sort of reinforce this, Mike, with a reminder that, of course, yesterday we were talking about the government committee looking into fake news. That is now starting, has asked for submissions. And we are saying here is the opportunity to start really getting the evidence in as to what the mainstream news has been doing, media has been doing to pervert good reporting. But it must be done with proper evidence. So at the moment, that inquiry only wants to look at fake news. It does not want to look at what the BBC has been pushing out. For example, here is our opportunity to really rub their noses in it.
What's next?
It's this one.
This one. OK. So, David, you've been causing trouble with the SNP because, well, perhaps you should give us the background to this.
Yeah, the SNP, the trouble comes prepackaged. I tweeted out to John Mason a link to a campaign for justice for three Scottish soldiers who were murdered by the IRA in the early 1970s in Northern Ireland. And there were the young lads, 23 down to the youngest was just 17. So as the SNP now defines things in Scotland, a child. They were in the pub, they were befriended in the pub, and the people who they'd spent the night drinking and chatting to invited them to a party, and it was a setup, it was a trap. They were taken away, and they were executed by being shot in the back of the head. They were unarmed, and it made a huge impact at the time in both Northern Ireland and obviously in Scotland. And there has been no justice, there have been no killers brought to justice for this. There's no explanation as to who did it, why, who ordered it, none of that. And there is a campaign to get some cash together. There's a crowdfunding source looking for £10,000 to start some legal action to seek justice for these three young men. There's about just sort of £7,000 in that at the moment, so that they look on their way to meet that target, and if anyone can contribute and help, I would very much encourage them to do so. So I asked John Mason whether he supported this, and the reaction was, I don't take sides. And I asked him why he wasn't taking sides between three Scottish soldiers and Irish murderers. Given the fact that he is a member of the Scottish Parliament, given the fact that he claims to be Christian, and given the fact that he claims to be in a party that is the very essence and manifestation of Scottishness, or so they would have you believe. And the reaction, this next slide is what he said, this got a huge reaction. So I had this exchange with him late at night. I came back down the next morning, and there was 200 or 300 tweets sitting with my name on them as people had reacted to this Irish freedom fighter comment. And I support Scottish soldiers if they do good, but not if they do bad. Now, people were asking, well, what bad did these guys do? They went out to the pub, they were friendly to the locals, and that hospitality and kindness and normal human interaction was used in order to execute a murder. You know, how were they doing bad, John? People asked, and of course there was no answer. He later came back and clarified his comments, claimed he was talking in generalities, not about a specific case, despite the fact the original tweet was about a specific case. So this went quite viral on Twitter, and it's been picked up by about half a dozen newspapers, including The Times, The Scotsman, The Scottish Sun, and several Belfast papers have picked up. So there's clearly a great deal of anger and disappointment about what he said. It then transpired, and it was one of the Belfast papers that found this, that the person who's running this campaign for justice for these two soldiers is in fact a constituent of Mr. Mason, and in fact two of the relatives who are still dealing, as so many people are having to do, with the aftermath from the Troubles in Ireland and elsewhere, with the devastation it wreaks on families. Two of the relatives of the two brothers who were killed are in fact constituents of Mr. Mason as well, and you can imagine how they felt about his comments, and they expressed it quite clearly to the press, and so that's blown up. Now, what's not happened is there's been no comment from Nicola Sturgeon, who was included in my original tweet. There's been no comment, really, from Mr. Mason. And there's a great deal of ill feeling about it. Now, we've talked today about the rule of law, and what we see here on one level is someone who claims the right to be a lawmaker. He sits in the Scottish Parliament. He's one of 100-odd people who claim the right to legislate our laws, and yet quite clearly he has no comprehension of what law means. He's no comprehension of right and wrong. He's no comprehension of the rule of law and how it should be applied. And there's another matter here, a matter I tried to cover in an article I did a few weeks back called Nationhood versus Nationalism, that the nature of the SNP now, not the SNP 20, 30 years ago, as I knew them when I was younger and growing up, but the SNP now wrap themselves in the salt iron. They claim to be the very personification of Scottishness, but in fact, the philosophy that they believe in is profoundly anti-Scottish. It doesn't value kith and kin. It doesn't value the fact of being Scottish. What it values is adherence to a particular internationalist left-wing political agenda. So if you find yourself within the borders of Scotland and you buy in to that agenda, you're in, right? It's blind to colour, creed. Doesn't matter if you're black, doesn't matter if you're English. So it says, look how inclusive we are. But what it doesn't say is that they'll have any sort of inclusiveness. They'll take any sort of variety apart from a variety of ideas. So if your ideas value Britishness, if your ideas value the United Kingdom, if your ideas value liberty, if your ideas value hard work and what were, until very recently, all of the traditional Scottish values, hard work, Christianity, rule of law, self-made men, standing on your own feet, taking responsibility for your own actions and helping your community as you do so. If you stand for those, you're not the sort of Scot that the SNP wants, and would really rather that you said nothing or left.
David, thank you very much for that. We're seeing this attitude, of course, across all the political parties, the mainstream political parties. So it's not just north of the border with the SNP. We're seeing it with Conservative, Labour and Lib Dem. It's only the party policy that counts. The other thing I'll say about this incident is I get a sense of unease that this language used by the man is, of course, reflected in what we have all been saying about Syria. Well, the official government line on Syria, because we've talked about those moderate rebels as if they were going around cuddling people, when, of course, the British-backed moderate rebels were actually murdering people. So I see this political language as being very, very dangerous. And, OK, two seconds. I'll just...
Yeah. I think that's an extremely important point, because the belief system that's on display here, we see all around the world. It's not specifically an Irish or a Scottish phenomenon. And once you abandon thou shalt not murder, once you abandon those sorts of standards, there is really no law, no depraved law that won't be reached, and no suffering that won't be caused. So that's the line, and that's the line we have to defend.
Okay, and I just want to add, and of course, if we see Britain using those very dirty divide and rule tactics in Syria, which are becoming ever more clear, fully backed by the BBC, I think we can be pretty certain the same dirty tactics were being used against the whole of Irish society during the time of the Troubles. So what actually starts to solve this problem is getting the real truth out about what was happening. And if people are interested at what Britain is capable of a nation, they might like to have a look at a book called The History of Torture. I've only just started reading it. I've got to say it's pretty gruesome. It's evidence-based. This is about Britain's role in the torture and abuse of people, starting at the very end of the Second World War, where Britain was happy to move into, amongst other ex-Gestapo properties, in order to repeat the same tortures that we were accusing the Gestapo of carried out. So I think there's a very big issue to do with how people treat each other. But this trend that we have politicians simply interested in the party rhetoric over right and wrong is the key issue.
David, you've published an article on the column on the named person scheme. You said to me earlier there's quite a lot going on in this area. Give us an update.
Well, this was from a meeting in Dundee on Monday, where it had been originally we tried to get a debate, but we couldn't actually find anybody. The organisers couldn't find anybody to debate the government side. So it was, in fact, three speakers on the subject of what's wrong with the named person scheme. With it being hosted in the university, there was a lot of people attending who were from social work and education courses. So that was very good. They were getting a different viewpoint from what's quite clearly been taught in the university in a very positive way, you know, very positive tone. And there was a further debate later on this week, which was, again, a very striking win for the side opposing named person and showing the origins which go back to Tony Blair and Tony Blair's determination to intervene before birth in order to sort out these nasty problem families in the way that only the caring state can do.
Look, David, I regret to say, looking at the running order here, that we haven't included this slide for the for your event on Sunday. Could you just remind everybody what the details of that are?
Yes, it's at the Brayport Centre in Dunblane, 2 till 5 on Sunday. We have, at the very least, we have four speakers. A common law advocate called Robert Sproul, myself. We have John Smith, who is speaking on his ongoing case using the common law to fight against injustice and seeking now to get the courts in Scotland to actually uphold this, which is obviously quite a struggle. And Neil McKechnie, who is also going to speak on legal battles and fights for justice in Scotland. We also may have Robert Green. Now, Robert Green has some illness in his family, so he's unsure whether he can be there. He wants to be there, so we're hoping very much that Robert Green will come along as well. So we'll have lots to say, and we hope there'll be a good turnout. And the people who come along will also be keen to contribute and stand up and say what they think and tell their stories.
Brilliant, thank you. And I think we'll end on this.
On Treason May, basically. Yeah. This article was sent in a couple of days ago. It's Monday, December the 19th last year. It made me feel utterly sick. It's Theresa May boasting that she's been switching on Christmas lights for NSPCC in Oxford Street. She said she's delighted to be supporting the NSPCC Little Stars campaign to keep children safe from abuse and neglect this Christmas. Harrowing and appalling revelations of abuse continue to shock and sicken us all. And as Prime Minister, I'm determined we do all we can to protect children from harm wherever they are, at home, in their communities or online. This is the same woman that put Melanie Shaw in prison as a child abuse whistleblower And of course, we've got massive cover-ups going on. We have no progress on the child abuse inquiry. This is sickening stuff, David. We're a bit short of time. I'm sure you'll have some comments on that. We'll come back to her another day. But if we want to see where the British state is going, well, here's the headline. Local authority granted permission by a top judge to forcibly vaccinate seven-month-old baby boy against his mother's wishes. Now, this, of course, was in a secret court. This is one judge in a place of business. We are now seeing that the British state is the parent and you have no rights over your child. And next week, we're going to be talking about this case, little baby Santiago taken away from his mum and dad. Had they done anything wrong? No, the state simply didn't like what they were doing. So, David, just 30 seconds. We're rapidly heading into a pretty vicious dictatorship here, fueled by politicians with the sorts of values you've just highlighted for us.
Indeed. And what do we need to do? We need to restore the rule of law. Now, in the realm of family law, Ian Josephs has outlined just how to do this, that nobody has their children removed forcibly without a jury of their peers considering it appropriate.
Yeah.
That would stop it, stone dead.
And we're back on the key subject there of the fact that we need to restore the rule of law in this country. And as somebody said to me a couple of days ago, when you look out the window, where are the criminals? Well, the outlaws are in Westminster. So it's up to us. Well, that brings us to the end of the news. David, thank you very much for joining us. We're in very troubled times. It's up to everybody to act and do something. Sitting, listening, watching is not enough. You need to act, and action conquers fear. Thanks very much for joining us. We'll be back same time on Monday. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.